Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
This is Wonderful. Welcome to Wonderful. This is it. You've made it here. Hopefully you didn't get lost. I know the directions we give people are a little arcane.
We're like, go where it feels right.
Yes.
And then turn into your joy.
Right. So,
and then stop at the anger.
When you reach anger, you definitely have gone too far.
And do a U-turn.
Although sometimes I've noticed that podcasts and radio shows, people like it when they piss them off a little bit. Have you noticed?
Who's they?
What are you? You know, like people who listen to radio and podcasts, like they like to get riled up and pissed off a little bit when you say stuff like that.
The listeners do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Our listeners all the time are always talking about, like, I wish you guys pissed us off more and razzed us more and pissed us off more. And so maybe that could be like a paint that we paint with on our canvas of
like,
love.
Hey, jerk.
That sounds right to me.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know if we were supposed to take like have like hot takes on things that we liked. You know?
No, I mean, I think we don't change the content of the show or of our hearts or of our character.
Uh-huh.
But I do think we frame things like, "What's up today? We're talking about laser tag. Isn't that fun? You jerk at home." Well,
okay.
No, I don't think you would say you jerk at home.
Okay.
Because that sounds more like a...
Or we could do more like, hey, we really like laser tag, and everyone that doesn't is an idiot.
Oh, that could be... that feels like it changes the message. I'm not about the message changing, I'm about the messenger. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means? Because I don't, and I...
you lost me.
Do you have any small wonders?
Can you go first?
No, because I don't think of one.
It's a real standoff
mm-hmm.
we got here.
I'm going to say it's rare, but when you do have a pleasant airplane neighbor encounter, that's always very nice.
Oh, did this happen to you?
Yeah. On one of the flights on this tour that we were on, I think it was we were flying from San Jose to Denver. I was sat next to...
Wait, you guys didn't sit next to each other?
No, we didn't. We were just sort of scattered hither and yon.
Okay.
But I was sitting next to this older man, and I was playing video games on my Steam Deck next to him. And when I kind of finished, he tapped me on the shoulder and was like, "What's the thumbstick fidelity like on those things?" And I was like, "Whoa, I don't know how to answer that." And I'm pretty deep in the scene. And he was like, "What kind of graphics card does it use?" And I was like, I don't actually know. I'm not really great with stuff like that. That's why I bought the Steam Deck, because it kind of handles that stuff for you. And then we got into a conversation, and he was a pretty hardcore PC gamer.
Whoa.
He knew a lot about that kind of stuff. We don't play, you know, our paths haven't crossed on the battlefield. He plays a lot of...
You didn't exchange tags?
We didn't trade tags. No, we didn't. But it was nice. It was unexpected. Everyone's a gamer now in 2023, but I wasn't expecting this gentleman, just sort of by the way he was, by the way he comported himself, to have like feelings about like, you know, the NVIDIA 4080 Ti series or whatever. It was fun. It was a nice little encounter. I think Dad mentioned, because Dad was sitting behind me, like, "It seemed like you had a nice talk with the guy next to you on the plane."
Okay, I'm going to bring up a small wonder that I came up with. So it's going to sound a little bit like a brag, but
okay.
I'm proud of it. So when Griffin left town, one thing I was worried about is bedtime, because Henry's bedtime routine pretty much revolves around Griffin. That's just kind of the way it's shaken out since Gus was born.
Yeah.
And so I had this idea that anytime Griffin leaves town, if he can record just like a 30-second video for Henry, and we'd have a new one each night to show at bedtime. And
right.
It was a huge success.
Yeah, sure.
It was like, it was nice for both of us, because like he had something to look forward to, and it kind of like allowed him to connect with you before bed in a way that he would typically. And it gave me some comfort too, because I knew that like we couldn't call you. Like,
yeah,
if he
sure.
was like, there was one time when you left town when he kind of put up a protest, and we basically hung out until Griffin finished his show so we could call him. And I was like, well, we can't do that again.
No, that was right.
Because he was up until like 10 o'clock at night. But this video thing worked great, and I thought it was a good idea on my part.
It was a great idea on your part.
And I would recommend it to anybody else who has a partner that travels. Mm-hmm. Just have them make a little video.
I do feel self-conscious every time I do one of those videos because I don't know exactly what kind of game to spit. Like,
I just told you, like, stay positive.
Yeah.
If you miss him too much or get like a little too maudlin, it makes him sad.
Yeah.
But if you're just like, hey, let's dream about this crazy thing, and I can't wait till we get back and I can do X, you know, then like that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that I was able to help in some way.
Yeah.
I always feel so bad whenever I'm not there.
Yeah. I mean, this was a tough one. Because you were gone for a long time, but like,
we did it. It was a whole mess.
We did it.
But we did it. We're here on the other end. You go first this week.
Cool.
What do you got?
The thing I have this week was kind of tricky to research because I didn't find like the helpful, you know, like beefy article about it. You know how it's like nice to have like one really good, like, you know, New York Times article to hang your hat on?
Yes.
So I didn't find that. But what I wanted to talk about was the live studio audience.
Okay, yeah.
This is something that has always had a lot of like mystery to me.
Sure.
And seemed super cool, you know, because I've never been to like a taping of anything.
You're talking about sort of in the like sitcom tradition.
Yeah, or okay. Like talk show or game show.
Right.
Have you ever been to like a taping of anything?
No, I went to, wait, is that true? I may have. Nothing springs to mind immediately. I did tour like the studios at Nickelodeon Studios in Orlando, Florida, where they made some shows.
Oh, you know what? Did At Midnight have a live studio audience? Do you remember?
Yes, but I was in that. So that was necessarily...
Yeah, but I mean, what was that? What was that like?
Uncomfortable. I didn't care for it.
Yeah, I have known people that have gone to tapings of shows. It's surprisingly accessible to do.
Sure, if you live in New York or LA or places where they
make television shows. Yeah, there's this website called One Iota. And you can just, they like list things that are upcoming. So you just like click on like Jimmy Kimmel Live and then it'll give you a calendar. And then you pick the day and you say request tickets.
I will say with the WGA strike that has just gone into effect, I will imagine that it will be tougher to get into one of those
events. This website is also where I found out where they're doing a Frasier reboot. Did you know about this?
I feel like I didn't learn that.
There was
I knew it like in my DNA.
When I was researching yesterday, like it's a little website and has little stills and you click on it. And there was one for Frasier. And I was like, what? And I clicked on it. And it was just like, Frasier's back.
Sold out through 2030.
Yeah, well, now the icon's gone. So I don't know what happened.
Again, I do believe that the writer's strike is going to affect probably Frasier.
True. I mean, the rest of the shows are on here. But
unless it is an experimental, live, improvisational theater experience. Of Frasier, which sounds cool, like an immersive, you show up, you're in the Seattle
You're Frasier now.
That's cool. Everybody wears, there's like 30 people at a time that go in, everybody wears Frasier masks.
Uh-huh.
And you go in and you have to like figure out who the real Frasier is.
Oh my
and maybe
God.
Someone gets killed at some point.
You're launched out of his dad's recliner into a pit of coffee.
Whoa.
Because that they do that.
Yeah, they drink a lot of Joe on that show.
Yeah, and then you have to swing from a long necktie.
Oh wow!
Into
with your hands though, right?
Uh huh.
Okay. Yeah.
Into the embrace of a Niles.
Right. Any Niles.
There's a lot of Nileses there too.
Can't get David Hyde Pierce probably for this when live you theater experience.
I'm saying when you enter, you either get a Frasier mask or a Niles mask.
Oh, cool! And you have to like find. Oh, that's cool.
And you have to find your counterpart.
That's great. I like this.
Should we stop recording and
we
work,
should probably work on stop this? Recording and work on this? Yeah.
Just real quick, what would we call this experience?
I wish you wouldn't put me on the spot.
I know. Sometimes it really pays off, though.
This is not going to be one of those times.
I mean, it's like toss salad and...
That's the obvious thing, but there's...
You wanted to do something like phrase experience or like I'm listening and you are too. There's options.
Give me to the end of the show. Like, okay. If I could just have to the end of the show. Okay. You know I'm not going to be dialed in for the rest of the episode, though, unfortunately. Even during my own bit. I'm going to have, like half my mind.
Well, and also, you're working at a disadvantage here because you never watched Frasier.
Huge issue for me.
Okay. So, most early radio shows, like, before there was television, there were radio programs. Most of them had audiences. So, the idea of, like, listening or enjoying a program with an live audience was not unfamiliar, but the first television show to do it was I Love Lucy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they started doing the multi-camera setup, and I guess Desi Arnaz was real instrumental in making this happen. And so it was like, you know, they had different angles and people could perform it more like a stage play and people could watch and react, and that was kind of what jump started it.
I've never thought about that.
Specifically for the sitcom, I will say.
I've never thought about someone doing that first. That must have been a wild experience to be like, okay, so we're going to go out there and we're going to make the television show and people are going to watch and laugh and cheer or boo. Do you think they even had the applause sign yet? Or do you think after the first taping, they're like, we have to show them when to laugh and clap, please?
I have to imagine they did.
Okay.
This around this time, probably unsurprisingly, is when they developed the laugh track.
Right.
Which was if people didn't laugh enough, there was a CBS sound engineer that developed a machine full of taped laugh tracks that he could use to dub over the actual audience reaction.
Damn. That job must really drive you bonkers to just like sit in a sound booth listening to different types of human laughter all day.
Uh-huh.
As you get on the ones and twos and try to mix together something that sounds like a pro. How do you decide, like, okay, so that joke right there, that's a 7. We're going to press a 7 on that.
Uh-huh.
Nothing too wild, but like they must have like a big red button on the Big Bang Theory that just says Bazinga on it that like detonates like the hardest laughter that exists.
It's funny that you talk about that. That kept coming up a lot because that was one of the like few remaining sitcoms that still used a live audience.
Was not Bazinga. What if the show was just called Bazinga?
That would probably pull in more viewers.
And
honestly.
His catchphrase was The Big Bang Theory.
That show ended in 2019, which I didn't realize, but yeah, it was still using like a live audience.
Yeah.
Although they did do a little sweetening of the pot, apparently.
Yeah, I remember seeing clips of how it ended with a new Big Bang like happening, and it was like sort of like this universe's time coming to a close, and then like they were that sort of the last remnants of life before sort of the heat death of the universe, and it all collapsed back in to make like another Bazinga. It's the sound that it made, and it was like very like it was like 2001 Space Odyssey, very like.
And then young Sheldon was born out of a pod.
Young Sheldon came out of the event horizon.
This episode's getting weird, huh?
Yeah, man.
Okay, so the live studio audience. So this was really big when we were kids. I was thinking a lot about the shows that like parents didn't like their kids watching specifically, and it was easy to identify them because there was always a lot of like, ooh.
Okay, so like a Married with Children.
Yeah, or Saved by the Bell. I remember if I was watching Saved by the Bell, I would always turn the volume down because as soon as that loud woo would happen, it was like a signal to my parents.
Okay, but you must understand, this is not a universal, like my parents had no beef with Zach Morris and his cadre of...
It was not like they were upset with the content. They were more disappointed in my interest.
Oh, Rachel.
Because the show itself, objectively not good, but as a young person...
Listen to 2023 like... Rachel looking back at 1992 Rachel and just lifting her nose up at her.
As a young person, it felt like a window into high school,
sure.
And it was very exciting to think that this might be what high school was
Christ,
like.
If only.
I know.
Jesus.
But the loud woos whenever there was a kiss or whenever an attractive person was on screen was really like, I mean, it was bracing to hear that woo.
This is very funny to me because I don't possess that hang up about the woo sound that is made on TV shows. And I feel like you have, maybe without even knowing it, thrown open the saloon doors into your soul and life and history and upbringing, that you lived in fear of
the loud woo,
loud sound that is a sort of sympathetic response to exhibitions of intimacy on television shows.
Wow, we are really cracking this wide
maybe
open.
Maybe we are a little bit.
I was also thinking of like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I think, is all time probably best live studio audience yeah. experience.
Well, you know, I was reading about it and I remember this because we did, of course, watch the reunion special.
Right.
Was that they would do a lot of performing in between takes,
sure, yeah.
like to keep the audience hype. It apparently was filmed on like Friday night
yeah.
and like, you know, there are a lot of performers on stage, like singers and dancers, and they would go for it.
I love, and I don't know why I've seen as many of these as I have, but like footage from the last night of taping of like a finale of a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or a Friends. I remember I watched one for Growing Pains once, a show with which I had very little affinity, uh-huh. but just seeing like, you know, all that squad. Why can't I not Kirk Cameron and oh shit,
Alan Thicke.
Alan Thicke. God, I can't believe I couldn't remember his name. Just having a tearful goodbye to the audience is always very powerful.
I know. Yeah. So the thing that I thought was interesting, I found a lot of like people writing individual articles about their experience on a taping.
Mm-hmm.
One came from a 2015 Slate article. And they talk about how they went to tapings of every late night show. So like late night talk show.
Right.
And they talk about the process of being an audience member and how you like you stand in line and then you get a wristband and then you come back and then you're put in a room and you're in the room for a while and then you are brought into the actual studio and there's like a warm-up process with like a warm-up comedian, which is not something I ever really knew about
yeah.
until recently. But yeah, like a comedian comes out and like apparently just like gets you like
that's pretty standard protocol.
Ready
for,
to laugh.
Yeah, for a late night show. What a stressful like job that must be.
I know. Well, and then there's some guidance on like applauding and laughing, and they like tell you what to expect and what to do.
If you could, sorry to derail this, but if you could attend a live taping of any television show throughout history that has off the air, still on the air, if there's one show that you could have attended in person, what would it have been?
Does it have to be a show that had an audience, or yeah. can it be any show?
Yes, my love. It would be fucking bonkers if you were like, I wish I was in the audience for Succession.
Well, you're making up this premise. There could be any rule.
Just saying, it would be great if there was like two characters kiss on Succession, and then in the background, you just hear Rachel's disembodied voice like, woo!
Oh man! I mean, you are putting me on the spot. I don't.
How does it feel? Doesn't feel good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I still don't think I don't have a name for the live Frasier experience.
I mean, you would really have to know more about Frasier,
right?
Gosh, now that's what I'm thinking about again. Okay, so here's the thing about that time period. Like, there were a lot of shows that had the live audience.
Right.
A lot of them don't really hold up.
No.
I mean, my instinct, if I'm honest, is to say Seinfeld, which I know is not
wow.
like one of your favorite shows, but was like a very important show, I think, for my family anyway, when I was growing up.
Did that have a live? It did? I guess I just always assumed it was not a live. I thought it was just a laugh track sort of solely.
No, there's a live audience.
I would say Conan, like old.
Oh, I didn't know Conan. Talk shows were on the table.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I thought it was just sitcoms.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, I would have loved to go to Conan.
Yeah, that's the best.
Or Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, it depends on the, yeah, I guess
depends
if
on
you
the episode. Could
pick the specific era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that I thought was interesting. I was reading a lot and I kept coming across Friends because, of course, that
sure.
was a huge deal. And each episode typically took up to 6 hours of filming because they would redo takes and change the script. And like people would be given sandwiches because they were asked to like stay there the whole time. So they would have
that's wild.
Up to like 300 people sitting in the audience, and like they would change the sets, and that would take 20 minutes.
Jesus Christ. You got to think round hour six.
I know.
When Ross says that joke.
Uh-huh.
The 15th time.
I know.
It's hard to probably gin up a good giggle out of that one.
I was also reading Frommer's had an like a testimonial from somebody who went to a Will and Grace taping.
Oh, I bet that was wild.
and yeah, it was the same kind of thing, like 6 to 7 hours of sitting there and watching them like make changes and do it again and not being allowed to look at your phones or anything.
God, Dharma and Greg, I bet, tore it up.
So all of this kind of dissipated in the 2000s. This is when, like, The Office, 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, like this kind of more documentary-style show or single camera.
Yeah.
That just didn't have a live audience. There was more of a like a trust in the viewer to know when to laugh, and that laughing wasn't required.
I remember when Malcolm in the Middle came out. It was so jarring. Like, why is nobody laughing at Bryan Cranston's great jokes?
Yeah, Malcolm in the Middle, Scrubs.
Life with Chris, I think, was in that same sort of
era. And it was just kind of like a shift away. And so now, like as of a couple of years ago, there's like not many left. But of course, talk shows still. During the pandemic, like nobody had an audience. And that was interesting to watch.
Man, we're about to get into that. I mean, I don't know what the plans are, but like during the first writer's strike, the way that talk show kind of weirdly zombified around that that event was wild. I saw a clip yesterday that I had forgotten about, but it was Conan just spinning his wedding ring on the desk. Did you ever see this clip?
No.
He would just spin his wedding ring on his desk and people would just like cheer as they watched the wedding ring spin because there was no writer's room to speak of.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a great topic and it does make me wish I had ever attended something like that.
I know. Yeah, I think, I mean, 6-7 hours. No, thank you.
Absolutely not.
But I'm always, you know, I was like one of those people, I get the DVD and I would watch the behind the scenes and the bloopers and whatever. And so I'm always interested in that kind of stuff. I think it would be cool.
Yeah. Can I show you away?
Yes.
(10) 9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. Blast off into wealth. And financial security and responsibility with Rocket Money.
Oh, that's the countdown.
The countdown is for the rocket. Uh-huh. They have to do that because if not, people stand under the rocket of Rocket Money. They get all burnt up dead.
Yeah.
So powerful is the force of this fuel as it's oxidized and ejected. But for you, some people get burnt up by the rocket, but you're going to save a buttload of money on things like subscriptions you don't need anymore that maybe you didn't know you had anymore that Rocket Money can not only identify for you, but also help you get them canceled.
I also get these little notifications that are like, hey, did you know that you spent this much money on this very particular online store? And I'm like, whoa, I am spending too much money in that online store. I would not have noticed it otherwise.
Rachel's candle habit was putting us out of house and home.
Do you know you're spending $750 a month on candles?
Well, not no more because Rocket Money showed you the error of your ways. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. That is wild. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful.
The following pro wrestling contest is scheduled for one fall. Making their way to the ring from the Tights and Fights podcast are the baddest trio of audio, the hair to beware, Danielle Radford.
It really is great hair.
The Brit with a permit to hit, Lindsay Kell.
The queen is dead. Long live the queen.
And the fast-talking, fist-clocking Hal Upland.
See, I can wrestle and be an announcer.
Get ready for Tights and fight!
Listen every Saturday or face the pain.
Find us on Maximum Fun. Now ring the bell.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Can I talk about my thing?
Yeah.
Wow. What happened there?
Still trying to think of a name for the Frasier Experience.
Let's pause. I don't think it's there, babe.
The coffee shop they went to was called Cafe Nervosa.
The fact that you know that is...
I watched Frasier. Took place in Seattle.
I know. Yes.
I'm putting out, you know,
feelers, yeah,
opportunities for you to latch onto something.
Okay. Crane was the last name.
Martin Frasier Niles. Maris Daphne. The dog's name was Eddie.
Yeah. There was a chair. There's nothing funny about this.
He used to say, I'm listening. I don't remember what his show was called. His little radio show.
It was a Cheers spinoff.
Uh-huh. Listeners, don't tweet at us because we're not really active on Twitter anymore. But... we're open to suggestions for this great new idea we have.
That we can't come up with a name for.
I'm saying that we could, you know, write in wonderfulpodcast@gmail.com.
What if it's just something like Inside Frasier, Crane? Inside Frasier.
Yeah, I mean, that's not funny,
deep
but...
Deep Inside Frasier. What if we call it Get Deep Inside Frasier? Get Deep Inside Frasier. And then it's like a being John Malkovich type thing.
Oh, you crawl in, you open a little
door, and then you're inside Frasier.
But I really liked our idea with the Frasier masks and the Niles masks, and you had to find...
No, everyone would still be... You could still do that.
But you would crawl in a door.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your topic?
Sports. Talking about getting a hole in one.
Okay.
Did you watch the video that I sent
I did
you?
Watch okay. the video. I was confused as to what I was watching because it did not appear to be like a golf game. It appeared to be more like a skills competition.
No, it was a golf. It was a golf tournament. Yeah,
it was so rowdy. I assumed it was
very
like a...
rowdy. Let me preface this by saying that I am not like a golf watcher.
No,
I've played golf like 3 times in my life, and I do like it. I do think if you can sort of divorce it from the culture of golf, hitting a ball with a club and seeing it go a long way and trying to get it in a small hole. That's pretty fun.
Yeah, okay.
And arguably, it's pretty fun. But I don't seek out golf experiences in my personal life. But the existence of the hole-in-one is pretty wonderful to me. This is inspired by a clip that I sent to Rachel. Happened like a week ago. There was an American golfer named Chase Koepka who was competing in an Australian golf tournament called LIV. And it was just at this course in Adelaide. And he takes his shot and boom, goes right in. And this crowd of rowdy Australian golfing fans pops off in a way that I did not know was possible for professional golf.
I found myself thinking a lot about, like, is this the standard response?
Is this how you
do or it? Did one person get excited and throw something on the course and everybody was like, that's a great idea?
What's great is everybody throws their beers at the golf, like their plastic cups of beer, not bottles. It's not Roadhouse, but everybody had these plastic cups of beer, and just as soon as it goes in, everybody just fucking chucks it, just launches their beer. And so now the course is covered in plastic cups and the dude is soaking wet with beer. And it's not like, you know, a live taping of like the Man Show or something like that. Like by all appearances, like it's a golf tournament, like a golf.
Well, tournament. It made me wonder, like, did people have to go after him? Like the cleanup must have taken
the cleanup must have been pretty bad. Yeah, this was hole 12, so it's not like this was the last hole and he was the last one to do it. And they're like, yeah, let's trash this, you know, wedding dress. It just turns into fucking bedlam. And it's someone rips their shirt off and starts swinging it around in the crowd.
That's why I assumed it was like a skills competition, because it seemed like this is not a golf game. Like, this is a party.
Maybe that's just how they do it at this particular golf tournament. But no, it appears to have just been a game of golf. What's really fun about a hole-in-one to me conceptually is it is, like, without a doubt, it is by definition the best you can do in a single hole in golf, right? And when you compare it to other similar sorts of big wins in other sports, like, nothing else in my mind really compares, right? Like a grand slam in baseball, a walk-off grand slam, very exciting. But that happens somewhat frequently, right? Like you see those, you know, in all the time. When somebody like returns a kickoff for a touchdown, runs, you know, 100 yards and scores a touchdown, that's exciting, it's thrilling, it's great. But you also see it happen with regularity. But there's an organization called the National Hole-in-One Registry, which, as far as I can tell, just lets players of any level who score a hole-in-one register that hole-in-one online, what course they were on, what hole they were on, what club they used, what kind of yardage it was. And then you can buy, like, a commemorative certificate for your hole-in-one, which I personally think is I had the same response of, that's adorable.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's also 100 of these organizations that are like, you can get a commemorative plate with your face on it, and you can get a special box that will hold your special ball, and it will cost you $200
that
you will send to us, but then everybody will know forever that you did a good job at golf this one time.
That would be great to, like, walk into an office and somebody has, like, their degrees on the wall, and then right next to it is their hole-in-one plaque.
Registry. So according to this registry, the odds of an average golfer acing a hole, getting a hole-in-one, are 12,500 to 1, which seems very specific to the point where it's made up. Pro golfers, they say the number is 3,000 to 1, which also seems made up. But more concrete is, on average, most courses on Earth report 10 to 15 holes-in-one per year.
Wow.
Which is not a lot. One sort of fun fact, your handicap in golf is sort of like your like ELO chess rating. That is like a measurement of your general skill level at golf. It is basically like, on average, how far above par you shoot. And so the average handicap of a golfer who scores a hole-in-one is 14, which is pretty middle of the road. That means, like, on average, you score 14 above par on a course, which is not great. That's, like, not what a pro golfer does. What that basically translates to is, it's pretty random who is scoring holes-in-one. Like, obviously, you need to know how to drive the ball forward and hit it forward and hit it hard enough for it to make its way towards that general area. But beyond that, it's not like you have to be fucking incredible at golf to score a hole in one. There's a huge element of randomness of how the ball bounces, how the wind carries it. Just anybody, you know, with a limited amount of golfing skill could be eligible to score a hole in
one. True, yeah.
And I love that. I love that. Will it ever happen for me? No, probably not. Because I'm not very good at driving. Do I aspire to score a hole-in-one? No, not really. Because that would, statistically, law of large numbers, I would have to play more golf than I care to.
Well, you know what's interesting is, like, unlike bowling a perfect game, like, you are far away from that hole.
You're very, very far.
So you're, like, seeing it on a screen. So there's something about that of, like a surrealness to it.
Yeah.
Of just, like, I know that that's my ball, but my eyes could not perceive that in person.
And you get a microcosm of that from mini golf, right? Like, for me, I love mini golf. We were watching Married at First Sight, and they're in Gatlinburg. So, of course, like, there's, like, a mini golf date that they go on, because Gatlinburg is just, like, in my mind, the mini golf capital of the world. And when you hit the ball and then you can't see where it goes and you're like, where's my ball? And then you look in the hole and you're like, oh shit, I got a hole in one.
Yeah.
That's exciting, but it's probably not as exciting as when you hit it, you know, 250 yards.
Yeah. That seems like a right amount of yards.
That does seem like a good amount of yards. So, okay, I think I'm talking about this because I'm more fascinated by this, the existence of this incredibly rare feat, of this like statistical anomaly that ordinary people can one day find themselves, you know, the recipient of. But it is also a sliding scale based on how big the course is and how far off, you know, the green is from the tee. Usually on a par three is when you see most holes in one. That's sort of the basic starting for like a regular size golf course.
Yeah.
That gives you, you know, one shot to drive it pretty far, one shot to get it on the green, and then one putt to make it in the hole. That's what a par three just.
Yeah,
right?
Makes sense.
So usually, you know, you drive it really fucking far and it just happens to bounce in a silly way and it goes in the hole and you get a hole in one. When you're two under par, that's called an eagle.
Yeah.
I love bird names in golf. That's very, very fun. But on a par four, a hole-in-one is called a double eagle or an albatross.
Oh.
Because you're three under par. And
yeah.
It's way rarer because, you know, it's such a longer distance.
Yeah, yeah, good. Yeah.
On a par five, if you score a hole-in-one, you are four under par, and it's called a condor. And a condor has only happened five times in official recorded golf history.
Wow.
Because it's such a huge amount of space, and it usually involves some freak, a squall of wind. It lands on a bird's back and rolls off and tumbles down a, you know, it hits the bumper of a car and bounces off. It's like some real, like, Happy Gilmore slapstick level twist of fate, the thing that happens, and it's only happened a small number of times. In 2012, there was a 59-year-old Florida woman who scored two holes-in-one in the same round of golf, which, according to this hole-in-one registry, only has a 1 in 67 million chance of ever happening. That's fun. Just this 59-year-old Florida woman, not a pro golfer, was on a trip with some... she, like, works at a college and was on a trip with some of her coworkers playing golf and then scored two holes-in-one, and everybody was like, holy shit.
Wow.
I read this interview with her where, like, she almost got a third one. And at that point, she was like, yeah, I mean, after you score two, you're, like, off the planet. Like, anything's... the third one just kind of makes sense after that, after you've already scored two holes in one. I obviously will never experience anything like this. But I do just find it very fascinating that it exists. And then I also find it adorable when, like, you know... an old man is like, this is the best day of my whole life,
yeah.
And I'm gonna frame this ball forever.
Yeah,
I think that is lovely and kind of incomparable in all of sports.
Yeah,
if you can find this clip of this man scoring, getting a hole in one at this Australian golf tournament, it really is. It is a delight to see how very excited people get to witness a hole in one. I have to imagine that even that is a rarity. That's it for the show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode.
What did our listeners write in?
I'm so glad that you've asked that because I have it pulled up right here on my phone, definitely. Logan says, my small wonder is finding a song with a beat that perfectly fits your walking speed. Mine recently have been Don't You Forget About Me and Got Weird by Doty. Extremely satisfying addition to my walk to and from the Metro. That is the best. Sometimes I do catch myself, if I feel like I'm getting close, like trying to change my own
Yeah,
gait.
Oh, for sure.
This is equivalent to like the turn signal click lining up with a song. I've always wondered if there's like a BPM for the turn signal that is standardized.
Oh.
I have to imagine no, but.
I do know that when you are looking for playlists for like fitness, you can like put the running time or the pace that you want. And you
can find interesting.
Music by the pace.
Yeah. Here's one from Kai who says, Pearl couscous is wonderful. It's like Dippin' Dots, but for pasta. That's very strong.
I do like a couscous.
I like some couscous.
Okay.
It has to be It has to be. I feel like I've had a lot of mushy couscous.
Yeah, it's got to be fluffy.
I've had too much mushy couscous. I've had too much mushy couscous. Why can't I say mushy couscous? Why can't I say mushy couscous?
Yeah, you've got to separate a little bit.
Mushy couscous. I'm done. Thanks for listening so much.
Can I run two by you right now?
Yeah.
So I think crane. I think there's something with crane.
Yeah, I think so too.
So I was either thinking like the crane game, like, you know, like,
oh, that could be cool.
Like, you know, where you would win a toy kind of thing, or like our crane instead of arcade. Something with crane.
Say it again.
Our crane. AR crane.
No.
Or the crane game. What about the crane game?
The crane game is good.
It's powerful.
I hadn't thought about it as gamifying this live Fraser Theater experience.
It feels that way to me.
Yeah, sure. No, I think definitely there could be something there. Maybe we tie like flag football into it. Like you have, like if somebody snatches your necktie off your neck, you get kicked, you lose, you're dead or whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe we do, maybe it is a death game. And if you do get your necktie taken away from you, you die in real life. That could be.
Yes.
And it's $1 million a ticket.
Yeah.
Only the world.
I mean, people love Squid Games. So.
Squid Games is huge right now.
And people love Frasier.
And people love Frasier. So maybe we just call it Frasier Squid Games. Frasier Squid Games could be it. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the shows that they got there. We have merch, new merch here in the month of May. Got some beautiful Nal jeans for you. If you go to MacroMerch.com, you can check those out. And got some live shows coming up here in a couple weeks from Bim Bam and Taz coming to Columbus and Milwaukee. And we got some more shows coming up later on in the year. So if you go to McElroy.family, you can find links to all those too. That's it. We'll see you in the Fraser Crane Games. Watch your protect your neck.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.